It was July of 1961, and the Green Bay Packers had finally arrived for their first day of training camp. And in the previous season, in the championship game, the Packers had blown a fourth quarter lead and ended up losing to the Philadelphia Eagles. And they'd spent their entire offseason thinking about that heartbreaking loss. But now training camp had begun and a new season had arrived, and it was time for them to get back onto the field and get to work. And they were highly motivated to do that and to get their game to the next level. And so they were expecting their coach, the legendary Vince Lombardi, to come in and to give them this huge pep talk and to really encourage them and lay out his vision and strategy for the upcoming season, starting from the moment of their heartbreaking loss in that championship game and building from that moment and taking them to the path to the championship. But what he did next surprised them, because he had a different idea and he had a different starting point than what they expected. He took them back. In fact, he took them a lot further back than they were expecting. And coming into the room where his team was sitting, he walked in holding a pigskin, and he said with five words, "Gentlemen, this is a football." Well, this morning we want to continue and actually wrap up our series on the book of Ecclesiastes. And the main character of this book is King Solomon, or most likely someone taking on the persona of Solomon. And he's on this existential quest to find meaning and purpose in life. And this person is called the Searcher. And it appears that he has all these unlimited resources and freedom to discover and to find out what the meaning and purpose of life is. He has all sorts of resources that could provide that meaning, whether it was money, sex, power, education, food, pleasure, you name it. In fact, throughout the book, he uses the expression, anything under the sun. But in spite of what seems to be this glorious opportunity to live the dream, the Searcher instead faces this reality over and over again, that life ultimately is meaningless. Or that the things that drive us as humans, whether titles or successes, achievement, pleasures, those types of things really don't bring fulfillment. That life is as brief as a puff of smoke, and that life can seem so meaningless and empty and unpredictable. And so in this final chapter, the Searcher brings things to a close with some unexpected words. And he's going to do it in a bit of a surprising way. And we're going to find out that instead of him leaving us with this brand new discovery or truth that will shape and guide our lives forward, ultimate meaning, ultimate purpose in life is actually found in coming back to the foundation and starting point of life. Just like Vince Lombardi stripped away everything by saying, "Gentlemen, this is a football," he brought them back to the very root and starting point of the game. And think of it in that way as well, that here when we strip away all the things of life, all those things that drive us, this final chapter of Ecclesiastes actually points us back to life's central core. And so we want to jump in here, Ecclesiastes chapter 12. And so we come to the end of this musing over life. My advice to you is to remember your Creator, to remember Creator God while you are young, before life gets hard and the injustice of old age comes upon you, before the years arrive when pleasure feels far out of reach. And then verse 6, so before the dust returns to the earth that gave it, and the spirit breath returns to God who breathed it, let us remember our Creator. Life is fleeting. It just slips through your fingers. All vanishes like mist. And then verse 13, and when all is said and done, here is the last word. Worship in reverence the one true God and keep his commands, for this is what God expects of every person. There are two major observations that come from this chapter, and they point us towards the foundation for living and for finding meaning and purpose. And the first observation is found in verse 1. Remember your Creator while you are young. Last week, Pastor Ken mentioned a study that was done on 50 people who are 100 years of age. And they were asked one question. If you had your life to do over again, what would you do differently? That's a great question. And here were their top answers. They said, we would reflect more and we would risk more, which is some pretty good wisdom as well. But we would reflect more. We would pause. We would think. We would consider with intentionality the things that we took for granted the first time around. And it's really this call to remember. Remember your Creator while you are young. Well, at first glance, that phrase, remember while you are young, seems to be pretty counterintuitive. And I remember as I was beginning to write this sermon, I spent a lot of time trying to figure out this connection between remember and young. I can totally see it as remember as you get older, because we tend to remember as we think back. As we get older, we start to think about the past. But how do you remember while you are young? Well, here in this chapter, and when you stop to think about it really in life itself, remembering isn't just going back and trying to live in the past or trying to just relive those memories, wishing for the good old days, or perhaps reliving a memory that has come and gone. But remembering means that you take time now to reflect upon the lessons, the experiences, the stories, the moments, the wisdom that you've experienced to date, and to apply it to this moment, to this present moment. As one rabbi said, we remember the past so that we can build the future. And the Danish philosopher Soren Kierkegaard famously wrote, life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived forwards. And so remembering has this future orientation to it. That's why the phrase, remember when you are young, is actually steering you on a path forward in life. I'm sure you've heard this statement many times before as a student, or maybe as a professor, you've actually given this a lot of, or you've talked about this a while before. But have you heard the phrase, you're going to need to remember this for the test? In other words, what you're doing now, remembering, is actually preparing you for a future time and a future opportunity and experience. And so here in this chapter, we have this beautiful rhythm of remembering that we're invited to experience in life. We're called to remember back, reflecting on those stories, those moments, those things that have shaped us, so that we can live present in this moment. And we're also called to remember, to begin taking steps ahead, so that we can live that way now. In his book, Thinking Fast and Slow, Daniel Kahneman, a Nobel Prize-winning economist, writes about this reality that he says is the experiencing self and the remembering self. The experiencing self is the moment that we live in this present moment. It's the moments that we experience right here, right now. In psychology, it's estimated that a moment can last up to 3 seconds. So when you stop to think about that, in any given day, we can be experiencing over 20,000 moments. And by the time we reach 70 years of age, at least 500 million of these moments. And so the experiencing self is about this fleeting present moment where we experience something and then it disappears just as quickly as it shows up. But the remembering self is the storyteller. It's what fills in the gaps of our experiences. It's how we derive meaning and emotion and all of those things from what we've experienced in life. And for a lot of people, remembering and the remembering self often leads towards a negative bias, where we look at previous experiences and we think about the things that are more intense and negative rather than the more positive, subtle ones that can actually grow us and keep us moving forward. And I think that the older that we get in life, the more we shift, or the more we can shift towards and function from that negative place, where we can begin replaying the losses and the griefs and the regrets and the failures over and over again in our lives. And maybe that's why we see that type of perspective show up all the way through the book of Ecclesiastes, where he figures out and says that life feels meaningless and futile. But it's also why those 100-year-olds, when they were asked what they would do differently, said we would reflect more and we would risk more. And it's this shift, this reflecting to a new type of remembering. But I think we need to take it a step further, because it's not just about remembering. Very clearly here, it's more significant than that. It's about remembering our Creator, coming back to God, who is the source of life. And if we're in this relationship with Him and remembering what He's already done in our lives and in our experiences and in our journey to date, then it could actually shape us and grow us and move our lives forward. In 2010, Michelle and I were getting ready to launch a new church in Langley. We had a grand total of 9 people. 4 of them were our family. So you can figure out the math on that one. But we had this vision and this dream to create a safe place where people, no matter their background or their spiritual journey, could come and to connect to Jesus in a meaningful way. We had just signed a contract with Cineplex to rent one of the 18 theaters at this gigantic venue called Colossus. It was a huge risk. But long story short, we knew it was the place that God had opened up for us. And on this particular day, I was meeting with one of our denominational leaders and catching him up to speed on what was happening. And when we got to talking about the location, he suddenly got super negative. And I remember him saying, well, you guys hardly have any people. Why don't you just meet in a house? Which on the surface probably seemed pretty logical, at least a safer, more sensible route to take. And I remember giving him some type of an answer in the moment, but inside I could feel something start to crumble inside of me. It's like this little moment of doubt suddenly reared up and said, hello, I'm here. And I remember walking out of the coffee shop, getting into my car, driving off, and then it hit me. Or probably more accurately to say, it was like God hit me right over the head. And he suddenly brought back to my mind and memory the story in Luke chapter 5 where Jesus asks his disciples to take a risk and to launch out into the deep and unknown waters in the situation that was in front of them. It's an amazing story, but it was a story that I had actually been holding onto for the previous number of months. And all of a sudden, in this moment where I felt everything crumble inside, God brings back this memory to me. And I remember saying yes to that memory, but more importantly, yes to God in that moment. And he brought me through this dark cloud and recentered me back on Jesus. And I can only describe it as this moment and surge of faith and life that took place inside of me. And I knew we needed to keep going no matter what that risk was, no matter the path that we were on, no matter that it seemed uncertain and illogical, didn't make sense. And we didn't look back. We launched later that fall, and for 6 years, we were able to pour into a beautiful community where life transformation happened again and again. Don't underestimate what can happen when God brings back a memory or a story or an experience to your life. Remember your Creator. It can change things. It can strengthen things and set you on a path that you never thought possible. Reflect on the story of your life to this date and time. Many of you are young, but think back to those moments that have brought you to this place and listen for what God might be stirring up and actually saying to you in this moment. And so to get back to the foundation of life and its ultimate meaning and purpose, it means first getting back to the reality of our Creator God, and it means approaching life with this aliveness and awareness that God is with us. You see, at the beginning of the story, God breathes His life, His Spirit into humans. It's that energizing breath that makes us come alive and opens us up to discover what it means to live with meaning and purpose as we connect in a relationship with God. And so we need to remember and be reminded and rediscover that this incredible, beautiful reality that our lives were created on purpose and for a purpose. And so life is to be lived and experienced with this passion and energy and breath. And that's why I think there's this connection in chapter 12 between remember your creator and youth. Because I think kids and youth and young adults get it. I think the ones who are young and young at heart intuitively live with this positive, life-giving, risk-taking, adventurous mindset. And I think that's why in this final conclusion to Ecclesiastes, after all is said and done, we are encouraged to live that way each and every day. Don't wait till a future time. Don't wait till you're old and at the end of life. Live it now. Reflect more. Risk more. When our daughter Katie was 5, we took her and our son Nevin to Disneyland. And Katie loved going on all the rides, and at one point she asked to go on Space Mountain. Now, if you've ridden Space Mountain before, you know that that's really not a ride for little 5-year-olds. It's super fast, super dark. But Katie insisted on getting on. And so, like a good parent and dad, I said yes. And I'll never forget the sight of her sliding into the seat right next to me, this little pint-sized girl. She could barely see above the car. And the safety bar came over our laps, and I turned to her and I said, okay, make sure that you're holding on to the bar. And the ride began. And then I looked over, and there was Katie, huge smile on her face, giggling away, hands straight up in the air. Let me tell you, she rode the entire ride, first time, hands up in the air, not hanging on to anything, but living absolutely free and alive to the moment. She didn't know what was coming ahead on the tracks. She didn't know when the tracks were going to shoot her up high or when they were going to plunge her to the depths. She couldn't see anything in front of her, and yet she experienced it with this adventure and spirit of living. And you know what? I copied her. I had to let go of the bar as well. And I started laughing and screaming and experiencing it alongside of her. It's a moment I'll never forget. We actually have a picture. This is not from the first time. And there she is in the front row beside her uncle. I have no idea what I'm doing with my hands in the second row there. But that's besides the point. But I love the expression on Katie's face. And she did it every single time. I don't know how many times we wrote it. But that expression on her face, the arms, tells you everything you need to know about it. What an incredible lesson and experience on how to live life. And I'll always remember it as this story from the past, but also a reminder on how to live life now. And while it may not technically have been a spiritual experience at the time, it has absolutely become that in my life today. This awareness that life is meant to be lived with passion and adventure and intentionality, because life and breath is a gift from Creator God, meant to be enjoyed and experienced in all of its fullness, even when you don't know what's coming on the tracks. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Live with this intentionality and purpose and aliveness. Let go of what's holding you back. Because if you learn and approach life in that way, you're going to begin to experience God's presence and breath inside of you. And that leads to the second observation in this final chapter. And so very quickly, when you live with an awareness that it is God the Creator who gives breath and purpose and meaning, it opens up our lives to a fresh experiencing of wonder and worship. And so the first observation is to remember your Creator. The second observation is to worship your Creator. It takes us from this place of living under the sun to a place of living above the sun, living in a reality that brings a new perspective and depth of meaning and purpose and relationship to our lives. And that's what verse 13 is about. When all is said and done, here is the last word. Worship in reverence the one true God and keep his commands, for this is what God expects of every person. I love that that is the last word given in Ecclesiastes. That when everything is stripped away, peeled back, brought back to its core, that the grand summary, the grand essence and building block for life and meaning is to worship God and to keep his commands. So what are we to remember as we move through life? Worship God. Keep his commands. For the Jewish readers, it would no doubt have brought to mind their great confession of faith. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord alone. And you shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, all of your soul, all of your strength. Make the things I'm commanding you today part of who you are. Repeat them to your children. Make them the last thing you talk about before you go to bed and the first thing you talk about the next morning. Do whatever it takes to remember them. And for us as followers of Jesus, it should spark the words of the great commandment given by Jesus himself, where he says the most important commandment is this: love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And the second commandment is this: love others in the same way that you love yourself. There are no commandments more important than these. And so this begins this declaration that God is at the center. And then our response to love him with our entire being, our body, soul, mind, strength, to love others in the same way. And then as that Deuteronomy verse tells us, to make it a part of who we are, to do whatever it takes to, and I love that, look at the word, to remember them. That's why the book of Ecclesiastes is so brilliant. After this long quest to find meaning and purpose in every place possible, the surprise twist, the last word, isn't that it's found out there somewhere. It's actually found in the reality and foundation of loving God and loving others. The last word is actually the first word, the starting point, the foundation for life. And so if we can just do that, if we can let that become the core structure in us, it will guide us and shape us in meaningful ways. There's this paradox in the book of Ecclesiastes. On the one hand, in this book, we're given this rather bleak view of life, life under the sun, that life is as brief and unpredictable as a puff of smoke, that life doesn't make sense or seem fair a lot of times, that there really isn't a lot of certainty that we can count on, and that ultimately death is the great equalizer. And yet, in spite of the uncertainty and the unpredictability and the questions, there is a last word. There is a word that is over the sun, and it's this: keep living life. Keep living life. Keep living it with every ounce and breath that you have. Keep trusting God in the process. Keep this at the center and foundation, even when life doesn't make sense. Even when life throws you a curveball, even when you can't control it or understand it, even when you can't see what's coming down the track. Keep going anyways. I love how Pete ends. A Bible scholar summarizes it. And he said the book of Ecclesiastes is this honest reflection of what people of true faith experience. The author drags his readers through one discouraging scenario after another where reasonable people might give up. But listen to this: but if we stay around for the end, we may discover some of the more encouraging words in the entire Bible. Face it all head on with complete transparency and unflinching honesty, without making excuses for yourself or God. And trust God anyway. Remember, reflect, live, don't stop, don't give up. Keep building your life on the one thing that ultimately matters. Keep learning to love God and to love those around you. If you want to live a life of meaning and purpose, live it with unhindered energy and with every breath you've got from your inside out. Live it with the realization that every breath that you've been given is a gift from your Creator God. Live it with the knowledge that you are created by God for a purpose. Live it with the intention and desire to love God first and foremost, to worship him, to grow in a relationship with him. And live it with the commitment to love those and serve those around you. That is the foundation for life. That is the starting point from which anything of ultimate meaning and value will actually grow from. It's how we're meant to live life. And so as we close, I want to leave us with a question to consider for our lives today. And we'll leave this question up during communion so you can reflect on it more. What stories or words or experiences do you need to remember today and to speak afresh over your life in this moment or in the situation that you find yourself in right now? I want you to ponder that, reflect on that question here. Let God's spirit and breath come and listen for what he might be whispering to you right now.